Here on our year anniversary month at Radio Rehab, and I have an incredibly awesome guest today. So I'm going to get to the chase. Don't hesitate to call if you want to. Dr. Katie's been in Evansville, Indiana for 16 years. He's a psychiatrist. He's the founder and developer of Katie Wellness Institute. He's an incredible doctor. And I was telling him how we've been a little hard on the ministers in the community, wanting them to address substance abuse issues with their congregations. And, you know, Dr. Katie said, well, you know, we in the medical profession probably need to do better and raise our awareness about substance abuse and addictive disorders as well. So he's going to be an awesome guest. I don't want to take up too much more time. I want to introduce you to Dr. Katie, and we'll get to know him. Thanks for coming, Dr. Katie.
Thanks, Lisa. It's good to be here.
Good to have you in downtown Evansville, Indiana. You're way out there in, is it Newburgh?
Well,
where you are at the Katie Wellness?
It's Newburgh by about 200 yards. It's just on the east side of the county line.
Yeah. Well, tell me and tell us in the tri-state, what in the world got you interested in medicine, psychiatry, and especially addictive disorders?
I was interested in medicine as a child, and I got sidetracked with a really bad math teacher in high school who convinced me that I was a total failure at science and math.
Wow.
And so I went into music, which was my second love at the time, and had a career in that. Then in my music career, in a little place called Brownwood, Texas, I was doing volunteer work in the community and ended up as the chairman of the Brown County Citizens Council on Drugs, doing fundraising and getting money for a documentary that could be shown in schools about substance use.
Wow.
So
when was that?
That was in 1975.
My God, right post-Vietnam.
No, 1980, 81 was when that was.
Wow.
And then when I ultimately went to medical school and was looking at rotations in psychiatry because you had options of where you could rotate in psychiatry, I thought the locked ward sounded too intimidating. I thought seeing adolescents I wouldn't enjoy, both of which I found to be false assumptions. But I really felt comfortable with chemical dependency. So I asked to be put on the alcohol and drug dependency unit at my medical school. And I saw there people get their lives back. It was where all the medical science that I had been learning in the first 2 years of medical school and the clinical stuff began to come together. I saw alcoholics with their pancreatic enzymes going up. I saw there was one guy that comes to mind. He was a judge, and he came in. He was yellow. He had an abdomen that was protruding so much that he looked pregnant because he had ascites, because he was perilously close to total liver failure, and he was out in La La Land. And in 2 weeks, with detox and the appropriate diet and stopping the toxins hitting his liver, he pinked up, he became unpregnant in appearance, he got unyellow, got back to a more normal pink, his mind came back, and he started talking.
Wow.
And in 30 days, this man looked like the distinguished jurist that he was, and he rolled on out of there a changed man. And I saw
that transformation in front of your eyes.
I did. And I saw multiple transformations like that. So that really got me interested in it. And then at that point, I decided I wanted to do psychiatry and selected Mayo Clinic, where I wanted to do my residency. And fortunately, I matched there. And at Mayo, there is a three-month program on their alcohol and dependency drug unit. So I went through that, loved the work, loved working with some of the counselors there. There was one guy named Jack McPherson who was a seven-time failure going through drug rehab. He had come back from the 101st Airborne in Vietnam, mad at the world, went across the U.S. in a drug stupor, and I'm not violating his confidentiality. He talks about this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's very open about it. And he finally got in recovery. And he and I hit it off. And so my fourth year, I was asked if I wanted to sit in and co-lead some recovery groups for people that had gone through treatment but wanted to maintain their sobriety.
Sure.
I did that for a year.
That's odd, like an aftercare group.
Like an aftercare group.
Wow.
And this was in addition to the rest of my residency responsibilities. I didn't get paid for it. I didn't get credit for it.
Just loved it.
But I loved it.
Yeah.
And it was really fascinating.
Then,
and so all of that informed me in my practice of psychiatry, and it stayed with me to the present time.
Well, yeah, and when you came to Mulberry Center, I worked on Parkside at the
right.
and I just knew your excitement for recovery was unique in the field of psychiatry, because there used to be this, oh no, don't say they're chemically dependent, it's got to be some psychiatric diagnosis, and there used to be this little war between the addiction medicine and the psychiatric medicine when I first got in the field.
Right.
So
and there was a little bit of that. Still, when I went and I was doing consults on that unit, you and I have talked about my experience in seeing people that would sometimes roll in there, not you know, routinely, but occasionally they would come in, severe ADHD, nobody had ever had the history, and I would ask them, so why have you had this problem with alcohol? Tell me about your drinking. And they would say, well, doc, I got a drink to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask them to explain that and you know, doc, this is the only way I can get to sleep at night. And mind you, it wasn't the only way that they could get to sleep at night simply because they were alcohol dependent. They had been hyper their entire life. They had bombed school. They'd had problems all their life. They'd gotten fired from multiple jobs. They had temper problems. They couldn't calm down. They were space cadets. They couldn't think.
My God, you're talking about all my best friends.
Well, some of those folks, Lisa, that's the other side of the coin, is because when you're talking about your best friends, they're ADHDers are charming, high energy, frequently entrepreneurial, passionate people that do extremely well in life. But the flip side is that they can do extremely badly in life if they get hooked up with alcohol and drugs and or self-treating or whatever. So these were people that were there ostensibly for alcohol treatment.
Sure.
Or in some cases, marijuana treatment. I would ask them, so, you know, why do you toke up? And, well, you know, doc, it's the only way that I can calm down. And I would put these people, I would recommend, I'd write the order to start them on low-dose methylphenidate or Ritalin, whereupon the chemical dependency, and I would diagnose them with
ADHD. Yeah, I remember that.
Legitimately. I mean,
yes.
It was a diagnosis that I made very conservatively. And people would just freak out. You know, you are putting our alcoholics on speed.
Right.
Was the question that I would get.
But, I remember that.
But it worked. Now, I want to emphasize, Ritalin and methylphenidate is not a treatment for alcohol dependence. It is a treatment for ADD.
Yes.
Which is frequently which occasionally coexists with alcohol dependence.
Yeah, well, definitely. I want to hear what you think about that too, the ADD and ADHD and some of the research that you have seen and how that is a risk factor for alcoholism and substance dependence. But I do remember when you came, and I remember in the rooms of AA and NA, oh my God, a dual diagnosis was unheard of back in the day. And to say that somebody needed medication, you don't even bring that to the recovery rooms. We've come a long way in that now.
You know, I learn a lot from my patients, and there's one guy that comes to mind. He was and he taught me this, and I've used this little catchphrase that I learned from him ever since. He was a gentleman that had schizoaffective disorder, which means that he could crank up into a manic state and he could also lose his grip of reality. He was very well maintained on medications for that, but he had an alcohol problem. And on his medication, he was going to AA meetings, and in fact, he was leading big book meetings.
Yeah.
And he was accosted in one of those meetings by some of the old timers that said, well, Sonny, you ought not to be on any medications because you're just chemically dependent. And he said, well, it says right here in my big book that you should trust your medical professional.
Right.
And that has been very useful to me. Now the problem is your medical professional better be trustworthy.
Yeah.
And so I don't have any problem at all in treating dual diagnosis people, but one of the potholes that it's easy to step into if you're an unwary practitioner is prescribing things that are that are cross-tolerant with alcohol. Mm-hmm. For example, an alcoholic comes in and says, you know, I'm in recovery, but doc, I'm having a lot of anxiety. Can you give me something for my anxiety? At that point, the last thing that this person needs is Valium or Xanax,
for sure.
Xanax being the most overprescribed and misprescribed drug that I've seen, or any of the tranquilizers. What the person may need if they have a genuine anxiety disorder is something that will not dope them up or fog them out.
And yeah.
Buspirone or Buspar is a good drug. There are
any
also
of the SSRIs.
The SSRIs, many of them are now on label for anxiety disorder. There are
right.
also
OCD.
There are also things that you can get at GNC or Dell's or Club Organic, some of the places here in town, like GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid, the only neurotransmitter you can buy over the counter. It's
wow.
it's a calmer, downer neurotransmitter. There's L-theanine, which is the calmer, downer chemical in green tea. It's been described as zen in a pill.
Yes, yeah, see, we don't even know this stuff in the recovering community.
Right. So
how we could make our life so much easier just in a natural
right.
green tea, for
green
example.
Green tea is very important when working with physicians. Well, first of all, from the physician's point of view, don't make the situation worse
right.
by prescribing something
absolutely.
that will cause the patient to slip back. And in terms of the patient, I work with a lot of people with dual diagnoses, and they have to be very careful between being fully self-disclosing
mm-hmm.
so that they can collaborate meaningfully with their medical professional versus being totally self-disclosing and then being looked at as some junkie or drug addict that, you know, you're not
stigmatized
to give a pain pill if they've got a compound fracture and they've got bones sticking out of their leg. So
what a challenge for a doctor.
Right.
And it takes a lot of time, I guess, to dissect all that. A lot of doctors don't want to take the time,
It does take time. And unfortunately, time is a commodity that is in short supply in
yes.
the practice of medicine the way it is today in typical either socialized or HMO or PPO type medicine where
right.
where physicians have to run, you know, so many patients through their practice per day or they can't make their overhead.
Mm-hmm. So in some ways, maybe it is almost like the clergy. There's just you only have so much time in a day
right.
to do your job and then over and above deal with substance
yes.
abuse.
Yeah. Well, I think the key thing, though, even in a time famine type practice, is interest and being interested, having an open mind, and being inquisitive.
Definitely, and you are. I know all those things from knowing you. As a medical person, is relapse something that turns a lot of doctors off about dealing with chemically dependent people also because the relapse factor is high and it's like, oh, this person isn't even trying to get better?
I think it can be, but unfortunately, it's an ill-informed judgment call.
Yeah, I mean,
if you think about it, a depression is a recurrent disorder. And it used to be thought to be, an episode, and you treated it, and then everybody lived happily ever after. We now know that there is a tendency for it to recur.
Mm-hmm.
Most physicians don't say, you lazy bum, you're not trying hard enough. How dare you
That's
come
true.
Back in a relapsed state? I mean, it happens.
That's right.
And so you deal with it. It appears to me that there's a double standard. Where
definitely,
it's okay if your rheumatoid arthritis, for example, has a flare,
mm-hmm.
or your pulmonary disease
mm-hmm.
has a flare,
That's
or
right.
your congestive heart failure has a flare, or your depression has a flare. But how dare you have a relapse if
on alcohol
you
or drugs.
On alcohol or drugs? And it is that also speaks, and I know that you're aware of this, and talk about it, of the disease concept of chemical dependency and drug use and drug dependency, in that it's a progressive disease, it has the characteristics of a disease, and it can relapse like
mm-hmm.
a disease. So
it, we need to talk more about that again, concept.
It really should not come as a shocking surprise to a medical professional that, you know, Joe here has relapsed. I mean, it happens.
Absolutely. You don't know Verdosky Miller. He's an attorney in town. He came here one day and he said, you know, in the criminal justice system, it's really great now that the courts are treating this as a disease.
Yes.
But once they relapse, you're a criminal again.
Yes.
And I thought, wow, that's true. And maybe physicians, too, think, well, as long as I'm treating you and you're symptom-free and you're clean and sober, great. But if you relapse, it's like you're not taking care of yourself.
Right. Well,
it's a challenge.
I have a great sympathy for the people in the law that work with this. And, you know, in terms of if you relapse, you're a criminal, the reason that they're involved with the judge and the judicial system already is that, well, they did something that was naughty. That's the reason they're
exactly.
there for. It's not, to be fair,
it's not coming into
system,
the doctor saying help.
It's not just that they relapse and so they're getting slammed in the pokey.
That's right. You're absolutely right.
They were given a second chance. They did something. And usually by the time they get into a program like that, it's not the first or second.
Oh, for sure. Especially drug courts.
Right.
And most of Judge Trockman's Judge Meyer are very sympathetic to the relapse disease concept.
I'm aware of that, and I've actually had patients that have been participating in those programs, and those programs and the judges involved get very high marks.
Yeah. Well, good. You do too, as a psychiatrist. We have to take just a second break. This is just going way too fast, and there's so much I want to know, and I'm sure you want to know. Don't hesitate to call. We will be right back.
Hey, you. Yeah, you listening to the radio. It's me again. Have you got that HIV test yet? As I mentioned before, if you have put yourself at risk by having unprotected sex with more than one person or used IV drugs, guess what? You've put yourself at risk for HIV. Make that appointment today by calling the Vandenberg County Health Department at 435-5683 or stop by 420 East Mulberry. It's that easy. Remember, everything is confidential. No one has to know you've gotten the test unless you tell them, so do it. What do you have to lose except maybe your life or your partner's life? When in doubt, get checked out.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Well, we're back with Dr. Katie and having an awesome discussion about medicine and addiction. Dr. Katie, I want to let you all know that if you want to access some of Dr. Katie's research and writings and what happens at Katie Wellness, you can go to www.katiewellness.com, and there's incredibly good articles. I just read one on the elderly that you're writing and aging.
Right.
Are you seeing substance abuse issues with the aging population now because of the availability of so much medications? And
yes, and also the relatively easy obtaining
of medicines.
Of medicines, yes.
Yeah. Hold on a second, Dr. Katie. We've got a caller. Okay. Hello, caller.
Hi, this is Kara, Lisa.
Hi, Kara.
How are you?
Kara Williams?
No, Kara Gurley.
Oh my gosh. Wow. How are you?
I'm good. I'm enjoying your show a lot.
Well, I'm glad. Good to have you visiting our show.
Thanks, Kara. Uh-huh.
Do you know Dr. Katie?
No.
He's awesome.
I just saw a little bit of the program.
Would you like to ask him a question?
No, I just wanted to be on the radio.
All right, Kara. Good to hear from you.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you for calling.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Now, there's a young person that, oh my goodness, would have periods of recovery, relapse, periods of recovery, relapse. Is it different with adolescents, do you think, Dr. Katie, the relapse and the...
It could be, simply because there's more going on in their lives. Adolescence is a period of time where people are trying to find themselves.
Yeah.
There's lots of stress. There's lots of life changes. Who do I go out with? Who's dumped me? Who am I dumping? Am I going to the prom? You know, what's going on with the football
all
game?
All that anxiety.
All that. Where am I going to college?
Yeah.
And later in life, things settle down a little bit. I mean, you're planted, you have a house or an apartment, or you're living somewhere. So, yeah, probably more difficult as an adolescent.
I think, yeah.
But you know, we were talking about, speaking of that, though, we were talking about the elderly. And it's pretty easy for the elderly to get into problems with what is delicately referred to, Lisa, as iatrogenic. Iatrogenic, which means a doctor did it to you. And sometimes, and it's not...
Is that true?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's not some evil, diabolical doctor that's just trying to get somebody chemically dependent. But if you have someone that's elderly that comes in and they're anxious about something, it's very easy sometimes to whip out a prescription pad and write something.
Sure.
And there are some very, very, very bad drugs that should never be written for the elderly. And alprazolam or Xanax is one of them. Because it is extremely addictive. It's difficult to get off of. It'll make you feel a lot better for a while, but it doesn't address the underlying reason sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in fact, it doesn't address the underlying reason that you're anxious to begin with. So it's difficult.
It's a setup. What about some of the pain medications? Are they pain, as well, like the Lortabs?
Very interesting. I just had a patient this last week that has had serious problems with headaches and has a substance use history and has been desperately trying to avoid the pain meds because, frankly, he has a problem with them.
Sure.
And I said, has anybody ever tried you on Toradol? Now, Toradol, it ends with all. It sounds like a heavy-duty narcotic, but it's actually a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory. It's like Motrin or Naprosyn or aspirin, and it has that effect on the brain, which is essentially nothing. But it has the pain-killing property of 2 Tylenol number 3s. And this has been...
Where do you get that medication?
You talk to your medical professional.
So it's a prescribed...
It's a prescribed medication.
Wow, what's the name of it?
Toradol. T-O-R-A-D-O-L. T-O-R-A-D-O-L. Toradol.
And that's a safe medication for pain?
It's a safe medication for pain for the people in recovery or people that have to have a clear head. Now, you can only take it 4 days. You can't take more than 4 a day, and it has the potential of tearing up your stomach lining. It's like super hard on the stomach over a period of time. But 4 days, unless you've got ulcers or a pre-existing condition.
So to get somebody out of immediate pain,
right.
like a toothache or a backache.
One of the first times I prescribed it was to a female chemical dependency counselor at Mayo Clinic that I was working with that had migraines. And I had just learned about the drug. And she said, I've got these excruciating migraines. Do you know anything that I could take that would be safe for me? And I said, absolutely. This medication is out. And it's safe, and it's non-mind-altering, and it would work great for you. And I prescribed it for her, and she was just extremely grateful.
Where do people find this stuff out? Do you have this in the katiewellness.com site?
I don't, but I probably should. In fact,
well, because the recovering community doesn't understand
I think that you and I should write some articles on it and get them posted out there. And I will make you and your audience a promise that I will come up with something on the website and we'll start posting.
Oh, that'd be great. Safe medications
Safe
for
medications.
Pain, for anxiety.
Right.
That'd be awesome. Because really, in Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous, that's just not what we talk about. It's a spiritual program of wellness and recovery.
You know,
people get that hurt. That is absolutely
appropriate. And to be fair and balanced as one of
All
those.
Right.
One of those
I've
networks,
watched that show, Fox.
One of those, well, I wasn't going to name them.
But to be fair
and balanced, you know, we've been talking about the biological, but the spiritual and the behavioral is extremely important.
It is.
And,
it's key.
You know, I don't just treat my patients with,
I know
with
you
medication.
Don't.
I'll say, you know, you, buddy, need to go to AA.
I know. We meet people in the rooms that said Dr. Katie told them he won't even treat them anymore if they don't go to AA.
Really?
Yes.
I have not heard that, and you just made my day.
I have heard that from people in the rooms.
Great.
And I think that's great that you do cover the biological, spiritual, and emotional
right. it's very
part
important.
Of this.
Yeah.
Do you think it's something you have to can you treat them all at the same time, or do you think one needs to really...
Oh, that's a great question. Yes and no. If you have an alcoholic that comes in full-blown alcohol withdrawal, that is not the time to send them to AA and tell them to be a good little boy or a good little girl. That's the time for radical medical intervention and stabilization.
Yes.
If you have someone that, but after that, and you use the term dual diagnosis a while back, which means somebody that has both a psychiatric or a biological problem as well as a chemical dependency problem. If you have someone, let's say, with bipolar disorder who is also an alcoholic, then both should be treated, and both should be treated pretty well as soon as possible. I mean, they need to be brought down and stabilized with medication. But then after that, even as they're coming back, if they're relatively stable, it's high time to get them involved with treatment. ADD and chemical dependency can be very touchy. For example, I have had people that come in using a lot of marijuana, and I say, "Why are you using marijuana?" They say, "Doc, it's the only way that I can focus."
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I say, "Well, stop doing that and clean up your act," then they can't focus.
Right.
So then the option is, well, should you treat them for their ADD while they are working on their recovery? Now, in the bad old days, the notion was it is naughty to treat the person that is a marijuana addict or dependent with another, quote, abusable, unquote, or, quote, addictive, unquote, substance. These people cannot get sober some of them cannot get sober unless they get treatment. So I will use a medication that is not in the same class that they are dependent on. So, for example, marijuana is a hallucinogenic and also a functions as a calmer downer. A stimulant is just the opposite. And a stimulant, a prescription stimulant like methylphenidate or Ritalin or Vyvanse or Adderall or something like that, as long as it's being used to treat the ADD to calm them down so they can focus, is perfectly appropriate in my book. And in fact, they can focus to the point they can pay attention in their AA meeting, and by golly, they can read the big book. And
if now they don't, there is
and if they, don't, if they don't have the treatment, they can't pay attention, they can't read the big book. So where's the common sense in that?
Yes.
So sometimes both should be treated together.
Yes. That partnership I'm seeing more and more occur now in the rooms where people, just especially chronic relapsers, were missing something biological that was happening to them. So you had said also, do you think the cocaine addict, we only have a couple minutes left, but is that the same? Is there the ADD and ADHD in the cocaine addict as well as marijuana and alcohol?
There are a lot of people that are cocaine users and abusers and meth users that probably have underlying ADHD. There's some that don't. There's some that use it just to get high. And that's an entirely another
animal, yeah. So how do you treat it? If a stimulant is what treats it for other people, what about a cocaine addict?
If somebody is coming in as a cocaine addict and they say, "Yeah, you know, Doc, I just love getting high," then that is a 100% referral to AA and NA, and you know,
and
you
get
can't
better
do this,
there,
this
right?
Kind of foolishness anymore.
Yeah. What if it is an ADD or ADHD patient that's attracted to the cocaines or the meth?
That has happened before. Then what I would use is a medication that would not be abusable.
Stratera, like an SSRI?
No,
yeah.
Like Strattera or Wellbutrin, something like that.
Wow. What a chemical warfare for a doctor.
It is, but it can be lots of fun, too, because if you understand it, and you can analyze it, and you can decide where you want to make your intervention, and then see your patient get better. It's one of the best feelings in life, I'll tell you.
That's so. Do you psychiatrists hang out like we in recovery hang out? Do you all get together and talk about?
We see each other together at meetings, but unfortunately we don't get together and talk about things like this. I suppose the psychiatrists that are in the recovery field.
Sure.
do. But
yeah.
Generally, psychiatrists don't have the chance to sit around and talk about things like this or even think through them.
Well, remember, Dr. Wooten, I think you too used to do the grand rounds.
Yes.
And doctors loved learning. They said they didn't get that much in med school about addictive disorders to begin with.
Well, maybe we should take this on the road.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Well, shucks, it is noon, and I just have so many questions. Would you come back, Dr. Katie?
Anytime.
You will?
Yes.
You all heard that Tri-State. He promised he'd come back. I'd love to talk more. We need more about medicine in our community and that understanding.
All right. It's good
Thank
to be
you.
Here, Lisa.
Thanks for your passion and commitment to the addictive disorders.
You're
we
welcome.
Need doctors like you. Between now and next week, if you all want to ask Dr. Katie any questions, go to www.katiewellness.com. And his CD and this whole interview will be available on my website, which is www.lisaseifcares.net. Thanks again. What an exciting show. Thank you all for your support and listening. Hope it was helpful to somebody. It sure was to me. And between now and next week, don't forget to do the next right thing.
The Pump, 1400 AM, WEOA, Evansville, Henderson.